Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Lindsay Patterson. The first sign of life on another world might come from plants. That's according to Nancy Kyung, a research scientist with the NASA Goddard Institute of Space Studies in New York. Kyung spoke with Earth and Sky's Jorge Salazar about the search for traces of oxygen from the photosynthesis of plants on distant worlds.
Dr. Kyung, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Hi.
So tell me a little bit about the research that you're doing into photosynthesis on planets other than Earth. What's new here, or what have you found?
Well, what we are interested in is what photosynthesis might look like on planets in other solar systems, because there are a couple space telescopes being planned to detect the spectra from planets in other solar systems. These telescopes will be going up about maybe a decade from now. And we figure photosynthesis has a is so widespread over the Earth, it creates a global signature of life that you can detect by telescopes. But on another planet, maybe it'll look different, and we have to know what we're looking for. So this research is motivated by that. Photosynthesis on Earth by plants and also algae in the oceans creates global-scale signs of life. These are of two kinds. One is the impact on the composition of the atmosphere, specifically the amount of oxygen in our atmosphere. Photosynthesis by plants and green algae and other kinds of algae produces the oxygen that we breathe. The other kind is a distinct reflectance signature of plants on land. What I mean by a reflectance signature is that plants reflect light in different wavelengths. We know they reflect in the green. That's why we see them in green. They also reflect very strongly in infrared. So satellites can actually pick up these reflectance signatures and then distinguish plants from the land surface and find them. What we are getting at is if plants exist on a planet in another solar system, maybe they will be reflecting in different wavelengths. So we want to know what's plausible for how they might reflect light on those planets. Now, it hasn't been settled yet, actually, by scientists why plants are green, in fact. So what we did was make a broad survey of photosynthetic organisms on Earth, looking at their reflectance spectra and also their pigment spectra. Now, the pigments are absorbing light, and that's the light that's actually being used for photosynthesis, what is absorbed. So we looked at their pigment spectra and reflectance spectra and looked at also the environments in which these organisms lived. And we came up then with some rules for why pigments select for particular wavelengths of light. For example, there are what are called purple bacteria that live in murky waters where there's hardly any visible light. And they are actually performing photosynthesis using infrared light. So on another planet, maybe that kind of bacteria would have the competitive advantage to come out on land. We don't know. But on Earth, land plants with green chlorophyll had the advantage on land. And the reason this is so is because if you look at the spectrum of sunlight, all pigments have to be adapted to the available resource, that available resource being the spectrum of light that's available. And on land, if you look at the spectrum of sunlight, most people have looked at the energy spectrum of sunlight. And that energy, when I say energy spectrum, that's the wavelength, how much energy hits the surface of the Earth by wavelength. If you look at that spectrum, the peak energy flux is in the blue-green. So scientists have often been scratching their head wondering, oh, well, why are plants wasting the best available light? It must be some accident of evolution, so we're getting inefficient kinds of pigments on land plants. However, photosynthesis doesn't utilize just total energy of radiation. It counts photons of light, the particles of light. So if you look at the photon flux spectrum of the sunlight, we see, in fact, red photons are the most abundant photons from sunlight hitting the surface of the Earth. And red is actually where chlorophyll has its high absorbance and does the biochemistry for photosynthesis. Chlorophyll also has an absorbance band in the blue. Blue photons are much more energetic than red photons. So it's basically this chlorophyll is basically selecting for blue because it's energetic and red because it's most abundant. And the stuff in between is green and yellow and orange, so the plants are more highly reflecting in green. That is, they're not absorbing green. So we came up with this rule. Now, there's another interesting thing that a lot of news programs haven't been getting this detail. The reason we have more photons in the red in sunlight is actually because there's oxygen in the atmosphere that shifts the spectrum of sunlight over to the red. If you look at the sunlight hitting the top of the atmosphere, it's peaking a little bit more toward the middle of the visible spectrum. But the filtering effects of our atmosphere filter out a little bit more blue, and then what reaches the surface is most abundant in the red.
This is something like when people see the sun setting, you know, and it looks red. It looks more red. Is this what you're
Right. So basically, the light that hits the surface of a planet is a function of the light coming from the star, and then the filtering effects of the atmosphere. And when you're seeing the sun setting, the sunlight basically has to go through a longer path through the atmosphere to you, the viewer. And so you see these different colored effects. The sky is blue because there's scattering effects of molecules in the atmosphere on a bright day that makes it blue. Anyway, what's interesting is that oxygen is shifting, or actually it's ozone from oxygen that's shifting the photon flux to the red. And what's cool is that oxygen came from photosynthesis originally. In the early part of the Earth's history, life presumably started in the oceans because that's where it was safe for life. In the early part of the Earth, there was no oxygen in the atmosphere, so there was no ozone from oxygen to create an ultraviolet shield against harmful UV. So it was dangerous for life to be on land. So life started in the oceans. The water absorbs UV and protects life below water. And then gradually, oxygenic photosynthesis arose and started putting oxygen into the atmosphere until we got an ozone layer, and then it became safe for plants to come out on land. And that oxygen has altered the spectrum of sunlight hitting the surface of the Earth. Okay, so we came up with these rules for how pigments absorb for light. And given that, we wanted to apply those rules then for how pigments would select for wavelengths in other solar systems on other planets. So we saw that we have to simulate the spectrum of light hitting the surface of those planets. So what we did was we looked at a variety of different stars, both hotter and cooler than our sun. And we simulated an Earth-like, Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone around those stars. Habitable zone meaning that the planet can have a temperature such that it will have liquid water that could support life. So we simulated these planets around these stars and their atmospheric photochemistry. The composition of the atmosphere is influenced by the radiation from the star hitting that atmosphere and all the chemical reactions that happen with the molecules in the atmosphere. Also, the atmospheric composition is influenced by inputs from the plants on the surface, so for example, oxygen. So we simulated scenarios where plants are producing oxygen and maybe not also, because in fact, for example, on Earth, the purple bacteria, they don't produce oxygen, but they're performing photosynthesis. So you could have maybe a possibility where a plant has photosynthesis that does not produce oxygen. So we have to look for what would the sign of life look like on that planet where there's no oxygen but photosynthesis. So given that, we simulated the light spectrum hitting the surface of these planets, and we identified particular wavelengths that look like they will be very likely candidates for photosynthetic pigments to absorb. And that's the result of this work. And we found you could have quite the full spectrum of colors. For hotter stars than our sun, you have the peak of the photon flux shifted a little bit more to the blue. So the pigments could favor absorption of blue radiation much more. For stars much cooler than our sun, there's a type of star that emits very little, much less visible radiation than our sun, but much more infrared radiation. So perhaps these photosynthetic organisms would favor infrared radiation for photosynthesis. And the interesting thing about these stars, these very much cooler stars, are the most abundant stars in our universe. so maybe they might be candidates for looking for planets more just because there's more of them.
What would be firm evidence, I guess, that we have found life on another planet?
People are pretty confident that abundant oxygen in the atmosphere will be a sign of life. There are people still making sure that's so, because oxygen could, for example, be produced photochemically by splitting some other molecules just in the atmosphere due to the stellar radiation. But so far, those studies seem to confirm that oxygen is pretty much an unequivocal signature of life. Not just oxygen, but ozone that comes from oxygen. So a simultaneous presence of oxygen, ozone, and water vapor in the atmosphere would be a pretty firm sign that there must be life on the planet. And if we don't have oxygen, if we can distinguish the planet's surface spectrum, what we will look at is we can say what the composition of the atmosphere is from these space telescopes, and then do what we've done with our current work, which is to simulate what the spectrum of light is hitting the surface of that planet. And that will tell us what is the light available for photosynthetic organisms. And then that will tell us where would the photosynthetic organisms likely pick out wavelengths to use. So if the planet is dark in those particular wavelengths, that means something is absorbing those wavelengths. And that could be evidence of photosynthesis happening that's not oxygenic.
What is one thing that you'd like the public to really to get across to the public about the work that you've you completed with your colleagues in on studying photosynthesis on another planet?
Well, two things. It's a thrill to recognize that the possibility of life elsewhere is very strong, so that we might not be alone in the universe. That life might not be like life on Earth, but it could be out there. It could follow the same rules as life on Earth. So if we study the Earth, we have to actually understand life on Earth much better in order to look for life else out there. Also, this work has made me personally really appreciate how intimately adapted life here is to our particular home planet and sun. So we should really treasure life as we have it on Earth, because maybe it might be hard for us to adapt to life on another planet, even if we manage to go there.
That was Jorge Salazar speaking with NASA's Nancy Keong. This has been an Earth and Sky presentation.
We're at earthsky.org.